All right. We are starting. Much like the first parak of Yeshua, the second parak of Yeshua is also a haftarah. Right? It is the haftarah for?
Shlach.
Very good. And it will become eminently obvious why it is the haftarah for Shlach. We don't have to do all that much, read that much to figure it out.
We're in the land.
Vayishlach. Yehoshua ben Nun min Ashitim Shnaim Anoshim Meraglim Acheres Shleimor V'churu Es Aretz V'Tziricho V'Yelchu V'Yavo Beis Isho Zona Ushmar Rachav V'Yishkevu Shama. So Yehoshua decides to send out two spies in order that they can check out the land, and it becomes pretty obvious why this becomes the haftarah for Parshas Shlach. Same story, same idea. We're sending out spies to see the land of Israel. Unlike, however, Parshas Shlach, this one has a much happier ending. The first issue to discuss here, actually, is when did this happen? A little bit of a spoiler alert. What's going to happen here is the spies are going to almost get caught. The spies are then going to run to the mountains, hide there for 3 days, and only then come back. Now, Rashi points out right away, there's a problem with the dates. We mentioned that Moshe Rabbeinu died on Zayin Adar, and the 30 days of the mourning ended on 30 days later, which would be Zayin Nisan. And they crossed over the Jordan on
the 10th of Nisan.
That being the case, if you had spies that go, spend the night, so now we're up to at least the 8th, and they wait 3 days in the mountains, now we're up till the 11th, when they come back over the Jordan, you know who they'll find? Nobody. Because the Jews would have gone across already.
Actually, they'd find the women and children from the 2.5 Shvatim.
Depends how far they kept on walking. Right? Eventually they'd find Assyrians and Babylonians also, I imagine.
Could there be like a double entendre that year?
What?
Could there be like a double entendre that year?
And if there was a double entendre?
Well, then they could come back and have another one to come later on.
Well, yes, you're saying that Moshe Rabbeinu would have died in the first entendre, yes? But the whole reason that we know that he died in entendre is because 33 days later is the 10th of Nisan. So that doesn't really work. Right. So Rashi from the get-go is bothered by this, by the idea that the dates don't work out. So Rashi comments, Al Karchi, Anitzachomosha Betolki me Eva Moshe Shalchem. He said it must have been that actually, even though Yehoshua was not chosen as a leader quite yet, he actually jumped the gun here and he sent out the Meraglim during those 30 days. Because if not, the dates aren't going to work. Like we've said until now, the whole reason, we know it has to be the Zayin Nisan, because that's how we learn Zayin Adar. They had to go over the Jordan, right? Right? They waited some time, right? So that's around a day. 3 days in the mountains, another day to get back, that's at least 5 days. So this isn't working. Even if the first thing that he does on Zion Nisan is send them out, they're still not going to get back until after Bnei Yisrael is already on the other side. So it must have been that this entire story is happening prior to Zion Nisan. That's what Rashi is arguing. So he said, it's 5 days, it's not going to fit in, it doesn't work. It has to be that way. So therefore, it's a little bit of a radical statement. It seems that Yehoshua is taking the reins before he's being chosen. Right? Here he is. Perhaps he was the leader elect, but he wasn't yet the leader. Yes?
Why would they have to come back while they were on the other side of Jordan? Why couldn't they come back when they already were in there? I mean,
Well, yeah, the story says they cross back and they deliver their report. Right, there needs to be someone to deliver it to.
Because it says they actually crossed the Jordan.
Right, they crossed back. Right, that's the problem. So that's Rashi's, it's a radical statement, but Rashi says, I have no choice but to say that.
To say that it was before he had the reins, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But wasn't he appointed as Moshe's successor before Moshe died?
So yes, but he doesn't take, but if you remember the first parak. Right. Let's go back to the beginning of the first chapter. Vayirachi mos Moshe Eved Hashem, and then afterwards it says, you know, we had from Zos HaBracha there was 30 days, and then only at the end of that does he get the reins? Yes, that's what I'm saying. He was
right.
Well, again, he was kind of the leader elect, as I said. Correct. In this week's parsha, we are tipped off that he is the man.
So what's wrong with sending people out ahead of the formalization of your...
So again, party? In general, even if a president is elected, right, he doesn't have a right to really start making any decisions.
But in this case, there's a power vacuum.
Right, that's why, again, it's not the end of the world. That's why Rashi's willing to say this. Right? But Rashi says, we're forced to say it. Right, says, look at his words. Al karchi, right? I have no other option but to say that this actually happened. So, like, also remember that does put the parakim a little bit out of order. But okay, again, not the end of the world.
Right, not
a big problem. You know, notable for sure, but not a big problem.
I assume we apply the concept of a mukdam and mukhar batura to Nach as well.
Correct, absolutely, without question. In fact. When you get into Shoftim, it's all one big happy in Mukhtar Mukh. No one has any idea what the order is. Right? The Gra actually disagrees. If you look at the Gra, in number 2 on the Adaras Eliyahu, says, Ki ba'ot shoshesh yamim. Back when he was told, in 3 days you're going to cross over. Rashi mefarsh zel yibtoch evol Moshe, ayin sham. Rashi says, this is a little earlier. He said, the problem is, we assume that that God gives over the reins after 30 days. And that's when things start. And based on that, 3 days later you're going in, right? That's how we know you count back 33 from the 10th of Nisan. That's how we know Moshe Rabbeinu dies on Zion Adar. If you're telling me that Yoshua is already acting earlier... So, how do I know we waited 30 days for God to tell Yeshua you're going in 3 days? Maybe it was a week later. And maybe Moshe died on Aleph Nisan. So, based on that, the Gra disagrees. But on the other hand, Rashi's got a pretty strong point. How are you going to fit the Meragim story in? Kevin she'ein anu yodim kamaha yezeh b'toch eva Moshe. According to Rashi, he's not giving us a date when this happened. He's just giving us it's earlier than you thought it happened. Shall test vayelinu sham terem vayavu hainu yom liyud uviyud avru es hayardein. So in fact, he says that he can squeeze it in. So if Moshe dies on Zion, so count 30 days. It actually ends on. Well, it depends. How many days? What? And not only that, but how long is your adar? If your adar is 30 days long. Right, if your adar is 30 days long, then your 30 days is up on Vav Nisan, because you count Zion, so Zion, you'll hit Vav, right? So therefore, he says, if that's the case, if Vav he's given over the reins, and on that day he sends him out, right? And that day they're already in Rachel's house, and then you have 3 days, Zion Ches Tes, they're in the mountains, Tes at night they come back, they get back just in time. says we can shoehorn them in there. It's interesting because that's going to lead to a little bit of an issue. The issue is a little bit with the days of the week. What day did Moshe Rabbeinu die? So if Moshe Rabbeinu died on Shabbos, what day was Pesach? What? Why do you say Wednesday? So Zion is Shabbos, so Yudalad is Shabbos, so Chaf Aleph is Shabbos, so Chaf Ches is Shabbos. Right? So far, so good? Right? And if that's the case, so assuming we have 29 days like every other month, so then if Chaf Tes, Chaf, we said Chaf Ches is Shabbos, Chaf Tes is Sunday, and what? And then Mem, then Rosh Chodesh Nisan is on Monday. Rosh Chodesh Nisan is on Monday, so then Pesach is on Monday. According to the Gruz count, Pesach doesn't happen till Tuesday. Why do I care? Alternate side of the street parking? Really? The reason is as follows. There is a rule that lo bedu Pesach. Pesach cannot fall out on bedu. Pesach cannot fall out on a Monday, a Wednesday, or a Friday. Never happens. Why not?
Yeah.
So that's a good question. What? Now, again, there are two ways of looking at it, and that's important. It has nothing to do with Kiddush Levana. One way to look at it is that there are valves in the Jewish calendar which can change from year to year. So, for example, we have a leap year coming up this year, mm-hmm. right? And therefore, there will be an extra Adar. That's a valve which changes the size, right? There's two other valves in the things that can change from year to year in the Jewish calendar, and they are? Cheshvan and Kislev, right, which is Rosh Chodesh Tevis, but 2 months in a row, that on some months they both have 1 day Rosh Chodesh, they're both 29 days, some months they're both 30 days, and some months one is 29 and one is 30. Now,
but that only happens in certain years, right?
What only happens in certain years? It changes, that's what we're saying. I mean, some years it's one, in some ways it's 10. It's not rare at all. This coming year, what do we have? Yeah, what about Cheshvan and Kislev? So again, it happens to be important because unlike the secular year, which can have 365 or 366 days, how many years does the Jewish year have? So it could be 353, 354, 355, 383, 384, and 385. Those are all the options that are out there. Next year is a 385 because it is a leap year with both of them being 2 days Rosh Chodesh. That's important because 385 divided by 7 is? What? 55 is correct. Remainder?
Zero.
That's why all of the holidays will repeat, because it's an exactly even amount of weeks. There will be no days beyond the weeks, right? There's no remainder there. So those are the six options. Now, all of the things that can move the calendar all exist between Sukkot and Pesach. There is nothing that could change between Pesach and Sukkot, right? Once you get into the Pesach time, you're set for the next at least 6 months. Nothing can change. So, in the event that, that's why, if you tell me what day of the week Pesach is, I could tell you what day of the week Rosh Hashanah is, I could tell you what day Shavuos is, I could tell you.
Right.
If Pesach is on a Monday, what day is Rosh Hashanah? So Rosh Hashanah is always the same day of the week as the third day of Pesach, of course. So therefore, if Pesach would be on a Monday, Rosh Hashanah will be on a
Wednesday,
right? If Pesach was on a Wednesday, Rosh Hashanah would be on a Friday. And if Pesach was on a Friday, Rosh Hashanah could be on a
Sunday.
Okay? Right. Those are the 3 days that Rosh Hashanah cannot be. Rosh Hashanah cannot be Lo Adu Rosh. Rosh Hashanah can't be on a Sunday, Wednesday, or Friday. Therefore, if Pesach falls out on a Monday, Wednesday, or Friday, it's going to mess up Rosh Hashanah. So therefore, that's the reason Lo Bedu Pesach. So therefore, it would seem that the Gra is saving us a problem here by making it then by making it that if you tell me Moshe Rabbeinu died on a Shabbos, well then by adding the extra day, you're pushing Pesach to Tuesday, and that's better. Yes.
But I mean, you're assuming that they have the same.
You're saying, wait a second, Rabbi, you can't squeak that by us. Really? They didn't have a set calendar.
Right.
They used to do it based on, so who knew how it was ever going to be? There weren't any rules like this. You're applying my rules. You're applying your rabbi rules to a time they didn't even exist. Sneak that bias with all your numbers.
Said,
we're not going to fall for that. So that, in fact, is Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos. With that background, we can now go on.
But wait, Bo. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. Oh,
so the question, right.
They would have the same schedule because there's cloudy days when you don't see the moon, then it would delay it a day.
Again, looking at Pesach to Rosh Hashanah in the desert, not so much. But, so that's a question.
I don't understand why you can't have Rosh Hashanah on Monday. What's wrong with that?
You can have Rosh Hashanah on Monday.
So
that was easy.
Sunday, Wednesday, Friday.
Why not?
So, because it just makes things more confusing. Because there's certain days I don't want Yom Kippur to fall out on. I don't want Yom Kippur to be a Friday or a Sunday, because I can't. Because I won't be able to cook then. I'll totally
got it.
2 days in a row where you can't cook.
So it's about Yom Kippur.
Mostly, 2/3 of it's about the Yom Kippur. So we'll leave it at that.
All right.
So the question is. Yes, this fixes the problem, but was there a problem of Lo Bedu Pesach prior to there being a set calendar? That is a question that Dr. Clayman so brilliantly asked. And in fact, that's a machokas between Rashi and Tosfos. If you look at number 3, Rashi says, Basheni b'Shabbos, Chad miyamos ha'chol nokat. It says that what if Pesach falls out on a Monday? So Rashi says it doesn't really mean Monday. So he said that, in fact, like you said, when they were doing the Kiddush HaKodesh Al Pi HaRe'iyah, when they were doing it based on looking and testifying, these rules did not apply. Tosfos, however, disagrees. And he says, "Ain tzar chafars the dafka nakat cheni dehu yoma kama de mikle arbasa the chad shabbos lo chazir arbisa dro bedu pesach gab al karcha chorava de mukila b'sheni b'shabbos ba'alma rohavi sheni b'shabbos dafka the rov era pesach mari hu adim rabaye etc." So in fact, there was a machokas here between Rashi and Tosfos as to whether the whole reason lo bedu pesach is because it'll mess up Rosh Hashanah. Or is there something separately, there's something intrinsically, a reason why I don't want Pesach to fall out on these cases, for Pesach itself, not for what it's going to do later on down the calendar.
Like what?
What? For whatever reason, they didn't want Pesach to fall out on these days. Yes?
Who said that Moshe died on Shabbos?
Oh, that is another excellent question. Right? I'm trying to give the shortened version of this, but you keep on asking the right questions. And now we're going to be here all night and we're going to miss the fireworks again for the second night in a row. Just saying, that's why tomorrow night we're having early class with the women. So I guess we got 3 nights in a row. So that is an excellent point. So everyone who said Moshe died on Shabbos, why did you say that? Come on, stand behind it. Because that's what it says in the Shemos Bowl Brooklyn. Good enough for me. I think, but also the other reason is that some people say that that's why we say Tzidkoschot Tzedek at Shabbos Mincha. Tzidkoschot Tzedek that we say at Shabbos Mincha is Tzidur Kadin. It's what you say after someone passes away, and we do it because we believe, among other things, that Moshe Rabbeinu died on Shabbos at that time of day. That's why we say Tzidkoschot to this point. What? Because then we don't do anything. Because you wouldn't do tzedakah kedin on a levaya on a day that there's no tachnun.
Yeah.
Right. You don't do aspedim. So that is the reason some people say. That being said, the Zohar says specifically not that way. The Zohar says that Moshe Rabbeinu died on a Friday. So based on that, the Gra is not making things better. The Gra is making things worse. Because according to the standard count, the Pesach would have been on a Sunday. Would have been one of those classic era Pesach Shaholios B'Shabbos years. And in fact, he would have moved it to a Monday, which is arguably a problematic day. Either way, getting back to Yehoshua, remember Yehoshua? So we were discussing Yehoshua, and the reason we were discussing this is because we're trying to figure out when this happens exactly. Right? According to Rashi, we are forced into saying that this story happens prior to Zion, prior to Yehoshua taking over. The Gra says not that way. Okay, good, fine, very nice. Okay, well, looks aren't everything. The Medrash Tanchuma has an interesting drasha on this pasuk. We just throw it in there because it's interesting. Really, that's about it. And he says as follows: Yilamdenu Rabbeinu, Mar Lif Rosh Leyam Hagadol Kodem LeShabbos Shalosh Yamim. Can you leave on a trip on Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday? This is actually a halacha in Shulchan Aruch. Kach Sheninu Rabbeinu Ein Mafligin Esasvinu Leyam Hagadol Shalosh Yamim Kodem LeShabbos. That we say, no, you're not allowed to leave a trip. On a trip on Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday. But Yam Shumahoech Makam Rachok, if it's a long trip, Abba Mavakes Lifrosh Kamo Mitzur Litzidon, it's just a short trip, like from Tsur, Tyre, to Tzidon, to Sidon, Mutalo Lifrosh, Nafil Be'er Shabbos. Now you can travel even on Erev Shabbos. They shall W. Duashu Yachol Lerech Mibod Yom, Bemedvar Barba Shulche Rishus. All these rules that I can only leave on certain days. That's only if I'm going for private reasons. But if I'm going on a mitzvah trip, I can go any day I want. Rama, mitzvah dochas ha-shabbos. Nothing makes God happier than someone who gets sent to a mitzvah and does everything that he or she possibly could do to make sure they were successful. etc. These two guys that were sent out, these were the best shluchei mitzvah ever, the Medrash tells us. They were going out to do everything right. In fact, what do we mean by that? What were they doing right? So we'll skip now to the Shla. That's a few centuries later. On Parsha Shlach, where he says as follows: Beis Yisrael beinonim, or haisa kavanosim al shum davar shek, rak fosu v'ragel eidah emes. V'efshi b'derech ha-teva. This is beginning to discuss with the question of the really most basic question on our story today is, why did Yeshua send Meragim? Yeshua was one of the Meragim, yes?
He was one of the ones that said, we can do this.
Right? How did that turn out, sending Meragim?
It was
a reinforcement to the people. They needed to see themselves to believe. Because there were 10 people that came back with a negative. He was positive, and now he wants the people themselves to see.
Well, again, he's going to send guys, and they're going to come back again with a negative. Why are we so sure it's going to work out better this time? Right? Right? Okay, that guy was money in the bank. Okay, but Caleb Unger's coming for Shabbos. Just while we're on the topic. just saying. Also, once we're off topic, I'll note that unfortunately tomorrow's the Levaya for Rabbi Milton Pollan. Rabbi Milton Pollan, everybody knows who he was? He was the rabbi in Cheyenne, Wyoming, in Congregation Mount Sinai in the 1950s. And he went on to a successful career in the rabbinate and unfortunately just passed away. And we're not bitter at the fact that they won't let us in last year. Not at all. Not one bit. No, no, not no. So why did he send them? That's the major question. Wouldn't it have been just... Again, Moshe Rabbeinu, had he had his druthers, he wouldn't have sent. Why is Yeshua sending? So he said that these were very different. The first thing is that it's who he chose. These are people who just wanted the truth. They wanted to go, and they were sent out. They wanted to report, okay, can we do this naturally, or are we going to need one of these God supernatural things? That's what they were there for. Well, some call Masanisim, Valkain Sivul Ragel. They weren't relying on miracles. They wanted to preferably do this in a natural way. Also, just basic military. From which side should we attack? You have to remember that in general, all of the wars were fought, as we will see going forward, in a very natural way, even though it wasn't necessarily necessary. But they understood that if there was no logical way to win, they're still going to go forward. Obviously, just meant that God would do it in a supernatural way. Similarly, if you remember in the Midbar, there was a miraculous cloud that just wiped out everything in front of them. So you don't really need to know which way to go when you got one of those.
Does it go into Canaan with them?
He said that's the reason. He says that things had changed. He said when they were in the desert, the idea of doing things naturally wasn't really necessary. Everything was supernatural. Manna was falling from heaven, right? There was this magical bear well that followed you around. The fact that they said, we want to go and scout it out, that was inappropriate then. However, this is different. Now we are in the land of Israel. There is no more manna from heaven. There is no more bear. There's no more cloud. That's why he said, that's why what happened at the time of Moshe was inappropriate. However, now this is appropriate.
Also 40 years later.
And therefore?
I'm just saying, it's 40 years later. I mean,
it was a bad idea then.
They're going in. It's important to kind of scout out where.
But again, they were about to go in 40 years ago. That hasn't changed.
Well, these Meraglim hadn't been in Mitzrayim.
Well, who are the Meraglim?
These three.
These two.
Two, I mean.
Who were they?
They haven't.
Well, one of them was. Right.
And he was one of them here.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize.
He's a positive.
Right. We're going to see that soon. So that's answer number one. The difference is that now we have to do things naturally. So the Alshech kind of says what the Schreibers said. In fact, it's surprising he doesn't quote them, where he writes that, in fact, this was different. We had stacked the deck. We had sent in Kalev as one of the two. Kalev we knew was going to come back positive. He was positive last time. And who was the second one? Pinchas, that is correct, right? So therefore, this was just in order, they were just sent to encourage the home folks, but they didn't really need them at all. So that was the second. And Vani Omer, Ki Yoshua also Liros HaDerech, Ki Nistak Yomud Hanang Shemei Saron. He said, but I go back to my first answer. They needed it at this point. No more cloud, as Patty pointed out. So therefore, we have two approaches here. Either they did it because they needed it, or they did it in order to encourage.
How do we know that the two Meraglim were colored?
We will see that momentarily. Right now, you'll go on faith. But by the end, your faith will be lost. The Malbim has other approaches. Same question. Why are we sending Meraglim? Wasn't this a bad idea the first time around? Five differences. I only gave you three of them. One, Meraglim Shishalach Moshe Hoyu Al Pi Sheira Sa'am. First difference is that was a grassroots attempt to do this, and that was Ratikrivun alai kolchem. Vatomrit nishcha nashim lefaneinu. Achein kishashavu hautziya diva samchu ha'amaleyem. Avol po shal yoshur midas atzol midas ha'am. Here, there was the first difference is there they came back and they reported back to the people. Here, they were only going to report back to Yoshua. So no matter what they said, it couldn't be so bad. So that's really a third approach. Two, which is four. Moshe shalchem imidbar paran, ha'yirachok min haaretz, v'yimistapkin b'mos haaretz, v'yichon z'chavsha. Avishua shalch min hashitim, sheg b'vul haaretz, b'ulti mistapik im yikone esim lav. Next is they're right at the border. They're going in no matter what now. So there is no option for them to say, well, we're not going to go in. Unlike the time of Moshe, when they were back in the desert, they could come up with alternate plans. Here there's only one other option. Finally, Moshe shalach shnei masar anashim tarim Yeshua shalach shnei anashim meraglim. Right? Moshe said 12 tourists, he said 2 spies. Ritzoni, ki kvar bi'arti b'pirush ha-torah, sheyesh havdol ben hatar v'meraglil. Hatar, the tourist, mevakish ha-satov. M'tov ha-aretz v'marashim gibarim, etc. Right? If someone who's going to tour the land is going to decide whether it's a good place or a bad place. The spy wants to know where the weaknesses are. Right? The tourist wants to see, let me see the pretty places. Right? And they come back and say, I don't like it. As opposed to Meragam, they're looking for the weakness. So for any of these five...
We always talk about the Meragam, right?
Right.
In the story in...
Right, so he says, so he thinks translating the word meraglim as spies is not correct.
But in Dvarim, when Moshe recounts the story, he uses the term meraglim.
Right. The problem isn't that that he uses the word meraglim. The problem is that we translate it as spies. Right. 1 second.
No, the first...
You're right. Scratch that from the record. Right. Fine. Okay. One more comment on this pasuk, right? We say here that Rachav is an isha zona. You'll note Rashi quotes the Targum that the word zona is translated as a innkeeper who sells mizonos. Right? Mizonos. She's like she owns a bake shop. Okay, obviously. That doesn't necessarily fit in with all the rest of the story, but we just put that out there. It's interesting, right?
It's been a masterpiece
bookshop. You see what the Barbanel says that?
What?
He uses the word grocer.
Right, pundakit is what it is. Right? That's the idea. It's
so why are they trying to clean it up?
What?
Why are they trying to clean it up?
So again... there's what to be said about this, but not for now. We're running. So far, we've been at this for 33 minutes. We've done one pasuk. So let's see if we can pick up the pace a little bit here. This isn't Pirkei Avos Shir, but it's not the Rambam Shir. Vayeyomar Melech Yericho Lemor Hinei Anashim Ba'u Heina Halayla Mibnei Yisro Achbar Taretz. Someone outed them. Speak of masterpiece, and they said and. And said that there are 2 spies that came here. Vayishlach Melch Yericho al Rachav Lemor, Hotziu Anashim Abayim Eirayach Hashabol Veiseich Kirach Poras Haaretz Bo. Said, okay, Rachav, bring him out here. Now again, the fact that they were sleeping there does seem to indicate that she was running an inn. Just saying. So the word comes out that those 2 guys are spies. Please turn them over to the authorities. Vatikach ha'isha shnei ha'anoshim vatitz b'no. Vatomer kein, bo erai ha'anoshim vo yadati mayayin him. So she took the 2 men and she hid him. Note the odd usage there. And she says, after she hid them, she says, yeah, they were here, but I don't know where they went. Vahi ha'shar v'skor b'choshach v'anoshim yatzu vo yadati anolchu ha'anoshim ridfu maher achareyem kisasigum. He said, just as the gates of the city were closing, they slipped out. But if you run after them, I think you could still catch them. But she had taken them out to the roof, and she had hid them under the flax branches on the roof. ואנשים רדפו אחריהם דרך הירדן על המעברות, והשאר סגרו אחרי כאשר יצאו הראשים אחריהם. So in fact, they took her advice, then they started making a run towards the Jordan. Why were they running towards the Jordan?
That's where they came from.
Right, that's where they came from. You're going to go there. They were going specifically to the Ma'abarot. What are the Ma'abarot? Ma'abarot are the shallow parts of the Jordan where a person can cross. So they figure, we're going to run, we're going to catch them there. So okay, so they're hiding on the roof, and the Yericho government, the Keystone Cops, are on a wild goose chase. And they're about to call it a night. V'heimah terem yishkavu v'hi olsa aleihem al hagag. And as they're about to go to sleep, Rachav comes upstairs. V'atomeh el anashim, yadati ki nasana adonai lochem es aretz ki nafla imaschem aleinu v'chi namogu ko yokshvei aretz mibneichem. Says, I know that you're going to capture here. Everybody here has given up. Ki shamanu es asher hivish adonai es mei yamsu mibneichem b'tzeischem imitraim. We know about Kriyas Yamsuf. We know about their battles against Sichon Va'og. We understand what's going on here. There's an understanding that no one thinks they can win because your God is the true God in the heavens and the earth. Said, I did you guys a good one here. I saved your life. It was a chesed. I'm in charge of the Richo Chesed Committee. And as such, I would expect a certain amount of payback that you should do chesed for me as well. V'achiyisem es avi ves imi ves achai ves achiyosai. What I want for payback is I want you to save my life, my parents, and my entire family. You said, and if we say no, you're going to give us in. Let's be honest here. We don't have much of a choice here. You got a deal. Fine. So she lowers them down via a rope because she happens to have her apartment is part of the wall, and through her window you can get out. So she says, don't be stupid. Don't run to the Yarden. Don't start running west, because that's where they're looking for you. Run to the mountains, which is to the east, right? Yericho is between the Yarden and the Har Yehuda. It says, go towards the Harim, go towards the Har Yehuda, hang out there for 3 days. After 3 days, the people who are sitting by the Yarden realize, listen, they must have beaten us and made it across the Jordan. Too bad, and they're going to go home. Then you can go. They turn to her and they say, by the way, we don't actually, that oath, we don't have to follow it. Why?
The oath that, to save them.
Right. Because it was given under duress. You would have killed us. However, since we're such nice guys, we're going to do it anyhow. Said, here is a crimson piece of rope tied around the window that you just lowered us down. And there, you can stick it to your ass, all your family. You, your parents, your siblings. Because, again, because this way, by giving her a good oath, now she's good to go. If they wouldn't have gone through this, she would have had nothing. So is this she's saying? Anybody, as long as they stay in the apartment, they're clear. If they leave, it's not our problem. And if you tell anyone about it, then for sure this is over. She said, okay, you got a deal, and she ties the rope. And they take her advice. They go to the mountains. They wait there 3 days. The people who were chasing them come back. But then they go and they cross over the Jordan. They go to Yoshua and they give them the report. They report back that they have just totally given up. It's ours. Let's now go back to the sheet. Now that I know I've finished the parak, I'm a little bit more comfortable going back. The Medrash in Bamidbar Rabbah fills in some of the questions that you've had. There are other sources. This is probably the clearest one. This is hearkening back to what we had said earlier in the Midrash Tanchuma, that nothing makes God happier than people that really give their all to do a mitzvah. Who were these people? Shanu Rabu Seinu Elu Pinchas V'Kalev. There's the answer to that. This was Pinchas V'Kalev. V'Holchu V'Nosnu Nashim V'Tzlichu V'Shlichusam. They gave it their all and they were successful. Mahu Cheresh. The first one said that they go around Cheresh. What does Cheresh mean? So Cheresh, I assume it's translated, whoever's in English, in the first pasuk, Cheresh is probably translated like something like quietly, I would imagine. Would be the more literal.
Secretly, right.
That is not how the Medrash understands it. Right, he Medrash takes the word cheresh to be more so to the word cheres. Right, cheres means pottery. Pottery. What does that mean? So what did he do? He said, they walk around and say, we've got pots. Whoever wants to come and buy it, right? So what was he saying there? He said, why the kokach lama shlo yagish pim adam? So they're walking around saying, look, we're selling pottery. So people wonder, what are these guys doing here? So they went to Rachav, and somehow word got to the king of Yericho what's going on here. When she knew they were coming, she went and she hid them. Listen to this. I'm a Kohen, you see. This week's Parsha. And Kohenim are just like angels. Shinamar, Kisif se Kohen Yishmu Das, Vitor Yavakshmi Piu Ki Malachai Shem Tzvokos. Who? It's a pasuk. In Malachi. Vamalach Mevakish. So he says, Nira Mevakish Eino Nira. Just like an angel could decide to be seen or not be seen. So basically he says that in fact that Pinchas had the ability to make himself invisible.
It says
that Titz bin No. It says it hit him. Right. So Batit Minim. Right. Well, she put them under.
Yeah.
Right. But again, it has a tits beno. Right. There was right there. The word hide is for like, what word do we have that's like Marsha?
Sorry.
When we hide the hafikomen, what do we call that? Safun. Right?
Oh, I can.
Oh, okay.
It gets hidden in the place.
Every year. Yeah, they still can't find it. How embarrassing is that?
Every year she's looking.
So I'm a loy pidchas, and he coin the any go chaveri, go hide him. I don't gotta hide. ואני עומד לפניהם, ואין הם רואים אותי. וכך עושה סוד שניהם, ותיקח איש את שני אנשים, ותצפניהם, אין כסיב, כאן, אלא ותצפנו. הראש רואה את מינו לפנחס. אלא לכל רמלי חושב, כמו כמה נוסטים שני צדיקים, אלו נשו לעשות שליחוסם, אבל שלוחים של שורך, משה ירושלים. Right? He said, this is very different than the other ones. Okay, so we know who they are now, and we know that Pinchas can do great tricks.
Know this because it's the Medrash, so presumably right. This is a tradition from Sinai. Well, not from Sinai, it can't be from Sinai.
Right,
why is this important?
So, what's the source, though? I understand that it's brought down in the Medrash, but
how
do we know this?
I think that a Medrash can be seen as a primary source. The next one I'll just say outside. Very odd Gemara in Zvachim. I'll just miss. What does it mean? Volkama od ruach beish. Nobody has any. Spirit left in them, so she said, being that she was a harlot for 40 years, she had realized that there was a sharp increase in erectile dysfunction at this point.
She said something like that.
Can you believe it?
No.
Next.
That mm-hmm. I can believe.
The Mechilta comments that this is going back to an earlier parsha. It says that Kriyas Yamsuf, the splitting of the sea, was such a great miracle that everybody in the world knew about it. How do we know that? So he said the proof is here. That she gets up and she says, everybody knows about the Kriyas Yamsuf. So that's just indicative of that. The Radak says, Ki Asisi Imachem Chesed, and the Radak makes an interesting point. What does the word chesed mean? Chesed means I give you something and I expect nothing in return. I don't expect a bottle of wine. I don't expect you to come daven in my shul. I go and I do chesed no matter what. That is the meaning of the word chesed. So she's saying, I'm doing for you. There's no reason in the world why I have to save you guys. That's why when she turns to me, she said, now I expect you to do chesed for me as well. Meaning what?
Payback.
No, meaning that you don't owe me anything. But still, I would just like, I did it for you for nothing, I would ask you to do the same. That's the reason why she says, I have done for you a chesed, I'd like you to do for me a chesed. Meaning that there is nothing owed here, but I'd really rather you do it.
But then they say, well, this is done under duress, what choice do we have?
What? Right, that's where they come back and they say, this is done under duress, that's correct, but we're going to do it anyhow as a chesed. That's exactly what they say in the end.
Yeah,
there is.
When she does the act at that point, she doesn't, maybe she has intentions that she's going to say, I want to be saved later, but the point is, at that point, they don't know that. They think that she's doing a chesed for them, right?
She said? Right, and she realizes that they could say no. Therefore, she at no point does she make an argument and say, you owe me one. She said, no, you owe me nothing.
Well, she could always go and tell after they leave.
That wouldn't have saved her life so much.
No, but if they didn't make it possible.
Right,
for her to
again,
save.
So you're saying she could have played hardball.
She could have said, I found them. Here they are.
What? No, she could have said to them, well, listen, either you agree or else.
Look, once you committed and hid them, I mean, the die is cast at that point, I think.
Yeah.
The other major issue that I wanted to touch on, which I'll try to do a little quicker, is as follows. When before the Jews entered the land of Canaan, there were specific rules as what to do about the inhabitants of the land. And they were...
Destroy everything.
Kill them all, right?
Yeah.
You can't allow them to live.
So what gave
them the right to save Rachav?
Because she's playing hardball. Because she did a chesed.
So it's an interesting question. It's an interesting question. Why was Rachav saved?
Did she do tshuva at that point? Because she starts.
And tell me, if they would have done tshuva, they could have been saved?
Maybe she's...
Well, who's again? And what do we accept Gerim from the Zion Umos?
No.
So that these are all good questions which are dealt with here. We start with Tosfos and Sota, number 13. Orabos Kananim Shebechutz Laaretz. Tema Hech Kibur Rachav Shehi Haisa Mikananim Shebetolcha. How what gave us the right to accept Rachav? Could Isav Esifrei be Parshas Baloska, Ma'im Misha Haisa Me'am, Shinema Borosa Chayakon Neshama, Achakirva Atma Kach Kirva Mokumva, Arach of Kai, Nami Mesechus Megillah, Shed Niskai Revenisba Yeshua. In fact, if you look at the Gemara in Megillah, it goes further. Not only was she saved, but she did in fact convert. And not only did she convert, she got married. Who did she marry?
Yeshua.
Yeshua. Didn't see that one coming, did you?
I did not see that.
Psh, unbelievable. So once
that.
Because well, it says in the Gemara, that's a primary source.
I got
if
it.
She had been in business for 40 years there,
yes.
How old was he when he met her?
So more
than 40.
So I'd say he's probably, you know, he's the fertile octogenarian.
Right.
I
would say he's about
80. That was for you.
He's 60-something, probably.
So
then, 80s.
So,
really?
Octogenarian.
And Pincus just went lived in the land, right?
Right.
They
moved to the German colony. That's the
end.
Went on nefesh benefesh. So 1 second. What gave him the right to save her, to convert her, to marry Yeshua? I thought it says you have to wipe him out. V'halchem mashta kananim shevetochel l'divei akol shein makal b'nosa v'shem al pi adibur haya. Tosfos gives two possibilities. Tosfos says either maybe the idea that they can't convert, that's only once the war has started. Before the war started, they were still an option to convert. Possibility number one. Possibility two is this was an exception. God said you can take her.
Did she save them?
What about her brothers, sisters, and parents? They saved also. Did they all convert?
Right. So, I don't know. Well, we'll have to see who gets saved. We've made the offer. We see who takes it up. Tosfos in Megillah, which talks about that, actually has a different approach. Kasha, hech nisba, how could Yeshua marry Rachav? Hamina perk arod, I feel big gay rusam. Less lehu chasnus. It says, even if they converted, you can't marry them. Must have been that she wasn't really a Kanani. She was a foreigner. She was an immigrant. She had moved there from a different
Resident
place.
Resident alien.
What?
Resident alien.
Right, you know. So that's why they had that big gate.
Yeah.
Right? In fact, they built the gate and they had the other people pay for it. That's exactly what they did. So another potential answer to say if she wasn't actually a Kanani. Maybe only began later. But that he rejects. So that's in the, so again, we have three answers. Marsha, another approach, number 15. He says, in fact, it was problematic, but once you swear, you're stuck. You've got to accept her. How do we know that? That's going to be a little bit of a later story. The Gibeonites.
Who ended up not being killed?
Why were they not killed?
Did they trip them?
Because we, right, but we swore. So that's what he says. Once, that's what we see for their rule, that once you swear, you can't go back, even though it means a violation.
Even though they pulled the wool over their eyes.
So that is answer number 4. The Ramban al Torah has a different answer, a very different answer. He said, the people from Gibeon, they were already following Hashem. We didn't have to convince them otherwise. He says, the Ramban of the opinion is that anybody at any time was allowed to convert. And the mitzvah to wipe them out is only if they don't. So therefore, this was never a problem anyhow. Okay, those are the five approaches. A little bit about Rachav. Rachav Azona, the Yalkut Shmuel says, Maschar notra alkach. What was her reward for this? She had eight descendants which were prophets and kohanim. The Elohim, the following are descendants of her. Yirmiyo, Chilkiah, Sroya, Maasiyah, Baruch ben Neriya, Hanamel, Vishalum. See, Mishpachas based Avdis Habutz, based Ishava, Elo b'nei Rochav Azona. She had been as a Meragim Babutz, based Ishava, Shinishbola Meragim. So, in fact, she was rewarded with all of these great descendants. That Yirmiyahu, in fact, was a descendant of Rochav. Rav Yehuda Omer Af Chulda Neviyah Isa B'nei B'nei Shal Rochav. Another one, Chulda, a female prophetess. Shema Vayeh Chalkiyah Kohen V'achikam V'achbar El Chulda Neviyah Isha Shalom Bad Tikvas Ksiv Heino Anachnu Ban Ba'aris Es Tikvas. Again, there's an allusion from the word Tikvas, scarlet indicates that's also a descendant. Hodvar and Kav V'chomer Ma Emish Haysa Me'am Shenem Ha'loisiyah Bo'osichya Kol Neshama If this is a woman who came from a place where we said wipe them all out, and she could raise herself to such a high level, how much more so we could raise ourselves? This is a long list of impressive women that were all converts. One last point is a point that
Chulda was a Kohen?
Chulda was probably a descendant of Kohanim.
Okay.
One last point is the Malbim, which we pointed. Amura, the Iki Mishwa Secha Kodemus Anu Nikiyim. This is the source which we said earlier, where they actually turned around and they said to her, by the way, note, we're not actually obligated to follow the oath that you put on us, but we're still going to do it ourselves. Okay, so that is the story, and we will continue next week, hopefully for our flight sometime. Thank you.